City would come to order. This is the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. We'll have a roll call to establish a quorum.
Senator Stevens? Senator Hoffman?
Here.
Senator Stedman?
Here.
Senator Green? Absent. Senator Wilken?
Here.
Chair Terrio?
Here.
Representative Samuel?
Here.
Representative Chenault? Absent. Representative Hopper?
Here.
Representative Cobb? Absent. Representative Curtula?
Here.
Representative Jewell? Absent. Representative Meyer?
Here.
And Representative Chenault has just joined us. We only have one item on the agenda today. Both houses of the legislature have recently passed legislation that authorizes the Budget and Audit Committee to enter into litigation with regard to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission Order Number 2005, dealing with the open season methodology for a gas pipeline. Mr. Balash, do you have some comments? And then do we have Mr. Shepler online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joe Balash, staff to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. In your packets is a copy of the resolution itself, SCR 15, a memo from Ledge Legal authored by Don Bullock, and a copy of the draft complaint, it's not a complaint, it's a motion to intervene. The memo from Ledge Legal lays out the rationale behind the resolution itself. The Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, like Ledge Council, has the statutory authority to sue in the name of the legislature between sessions. However, Chevron filed their complaint in District Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. on April 8th. There's 30 days to intervene. That would put us on Mother's Day prior to adjournment, hopefully. And so the delegation of the authority to the committee was necessary. That is what SCR 15 accomplished. And then the motion to intervene, the copy of which is in your packets, Mr. Shepler can speak to.
So we could have taken the action without the resolution if, in fact, the period to file had taken us into the interim. But while the legislature is available, the statutes say that if the legislature is available, then the legislature should be required to prompt the action. So with that, Mr. Shepler, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We have the document here. It's fairly brief, and I don't know if you want to highlight anything in particular on it.
The only thing I would say on this is that this is really just a procedural matter. The committee participated in the FERC rulemaking proceedings, and those proceedings have now moved on into the Court of Appeals. And all this motion does is make us a party to that appeal so that we can continue to take whatever action is appropriate to maintain the standing of the FERC order. So this is just really a technical, legal, procedural event, but we do have to file it no later than Monday. And with the approval of the committee, I'm prepared to have this filed in the D.C. Circuit sometime during the day on Monday.
And Don, then, do you have any idea of when the next decision in the legal proceeding may come?
The best guess I can give you, we have to sort of break it into, I'd call it two tracks. Let's start with the FERC side of the equation. The FERC has issued their order on February 9th to become effective 90 days after it was published in the Federal Register, which is coming up in, I don't have the date in front of me, but you know, let's say it's mid-May. The number of parties have filed for what's called rehearing of the FERC order, and the FERC has taken that under advisement, and I would expect, but I have no guarantee, that when the FERC meets again in their mid-month meeting in May, which I can give you a target date, that would be about the 18th, I would expect that the commission would take up the rehearing request. Once the commission acts on rehearing, it would be expected that others would seek to appeal that order or possibly ask for further rehearing to the extent that the commission might have made changes in its order. So there's another shoe to drop, if you will, at the FERC. They have to act on the rehearing, and that may generate another round of paper filing at the agency, but I would expect it would also start the clock running on more appeals being filed in the Court of Appeals. Now, one nice thing that works in our favor under the D.C. Circuit rules is that once we are made a party to the Chevron appeal, we become a party to all of the appeals that are subsequently filed appealing the same order. So once we get this motion to intervene filed, we will then be party to all of the proceedings that go into the Court of Appeals. The statute under which the Order 2005 was issued, which was the federal statute that was enacted last October, provides that all appeals from any FERC action under that statute have to be lodged in the District of Columbia Circuit Court of Appeals and have to be treated expeditiously by that court. So that's the scenario, the track of how things may progress within the on the FERC side of this. The Court of Appeals has typically, once interventions come in, there's a provision of time within which the respondent, in this case the FERC, can file to dismiss, have the case dismissed, and on whatever grounds it may seek to do, and thereafter the court will establish a briefing schedule for the appeal. I would expect that the briefing schedule will not be established at least until we get the other appeals get to be filed within 60 days after the order on rehearing comes out. And at that point, at some point, let's say within the next 90 days or so, there ought to be established some sort of briefing schedule for all of the appeals of Order 2005. And then under the requirement that the judicial proceedings be expedited, there will then proceed to have oral arguments on the appeal and a decision. So the exact timeline that this will take can't really be determined at this point. It depends on when the court, which really you can't honestly predict what the court's going to do when they set their briefing schedule. But certainly the thing that can be predicted is that sometime within the next 2 weeks, I would guess, or certainly within the next month, is that the FERC will dispose of the pending request for rehearing, and then parties can then proceed to go to the Court of Appeals if they so choose, and ultimately we're going to get closure on the finality of these rules. So that would be my summary of the expectation, which is all I can give you at this point, of how things may play out on a timeline.
Okay. Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Don. For the finality on this, give us a range of dates.
Final finality, end of the year.
Okay. Thanks.
I mean, that's a guesstimate.
Sure.
I understand that. I mean, that's just, you know, as best I can do sitting here.
Okay. And Don, we may not other than filing this to sort of get our place in the court proceeding, we may choose to take no further action, and the filing affords us, we will then receive all of the action that is brought to the court.
Right. That certainly is true, that we are not obligated to do anything. Our rights, since we did not file an appeal because we thought the order was pretty favorable, since we did not file an appeal, we don't have the right, if you will, to file any briefs. But by being an intervener, we become a party to the case, and we will thereby get copies of everything that is filed in the court proceeding on this appeal and all subsequent appeals of Order 2005. And depending on what is filed, we may, we will take whatever action best serves our interest at that time, but we won't be able to take those actions if we are not an intervener.
Okay. And as far as the intervening on this case automatically brings us into any subsequent legal challenge brought by any other party, is that because the court actually consolidates all of the cases?
It's because it's part of the court's rules under Rule 15B, I believe it is, of the court rules, which I don't have real handy in front of me. But the rules state that if you are an intervener in a proceeding, that makes you an intervener in all subsequently filed appeals before the Court of Appeals in the same case. So as a matter of the operation of the rules, we would be a party. I would certainly expect that any subsequent appeals would all be consolidated if there was one oral argument and one Court of Appeals decision.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Shepler? Seeing none, Representative Samuels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee authorize Mr. Shepler to file the motion in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit and to authorize the chairman to order further motions to be filed by the LBN attorney during the interim on the same subject.
Are there questions on the motion?
Mr. Chairman, let me ask one quick question. I may be out of order here.
Go ahead.
The draft you have in front of you is to have the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee as an entity intervene. Is that, in light of the resolutions that have been passed by the legislature, is that still the body that would be doing the intervention, or would it be the entire legislature?
Well, it would be the Budget and Audit Committee on behalf of the legislature.
Okay, that's fine. I just needed that clarification. I may need to tweak the wording of the motion slightly. I assume I have that authority.
Yes. Are there any further questions on the motion? Seeing none, we'll have a roll call vote, please.
Senator Stevens, absent. Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Wilkins?
Yes.
Chair Terrio?
Yes.
Representative Samuels?
Yes.
Representative Chenault?
Yes.
Representative Hawker?
Yes.
Representative Cott, absent. Representative Pertula?
Yes.
Representative Jewell, absent. Representative Meyer?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes, so we will preserve our rights in the D.C. Court. Joe, would you just give us a little bit of information on the meeting that we're scheduling next week?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Next week on Wednesday, we're going to be hosting some officials from federal agencies at the Department of Interior, Department of Energy, as well as FERC staff. They are accompanying former Senate President Drew Pierce, who is a special assistant to the Secretary of Interior, for a meeting here to provide some updates and feedback on what it is the federal agencies are doing and have done in preparation for the receipt of a FERC certificate. In the Natural Gas Pipeline Act of 2004, FERC was vested with coordination authority to oversee the permitting and certification of the pipeline. So they will also be speaking to us regarding the status of regs on the federal loan guarantees, how they're going to work, how they might work, that sort of thing. So since it is the day after adjournment, we will definitely schedule it in the afternoon. But we don't know specifically what time. If there are times that don't work for any of the members, we certainly would be flexible in scheduling around them.
Okay, so we will be in touch. You'll all be cleaning out your refrigerators, of course, on Wednesday morning. So, Senator Hoffman.
I was under the assumption that it was scheduled on Wednesday because we would still be here taking care of the state's business.
Senator, Senator,
your pleasure.
Hoffman, you're such a pessimist.
I think he's a realist.
Yeah. With that, there's no further action to come. Senator Wilken.
Yeah, could I take a few minutes to talk about testing?
Sure.
There's an issue that's come up in the last month. I'd like to take the committee's time this morning, about 5 minutes, to talk about it, and then ask the chairman under his ability to on this committee to issue a RFP to slow down a train that's running down the tracks and it's rolling over our efforts in this building to put forth a high school qualifying exam that is valid and reliable. As you know, in April, the new qualifying exam was put in place, and it was panned across the state as not adequate and certainly not a good measurement of our 3 through 11 students. You remember back House Bill 146 when Representative Bundy passed that. That was the time that this legislature started working on high school qualifying exam, and we were ahead of the curve. And we spent almost $20 million to develop a test. Two things then happened. The federal government stepped in with NCLB and said, well, nice, but we need to do it a different way, at least somewhat different. The new commissioner looked at that, and if you'll remember, 2 years ago, December of 2003, a new RFP was issued and a new test was started. And it was rushed by most. It was rushed into existence and was administered in April of this year. It was bereft with problems. I'll come back to that. Where are we today? As a result of the April tests, the commissioner is going to meet in May and set up the cut scores for the tests in October. So I don't know much about statistics, but I do know a single snapshot of a test that, for various reasons, is flawed in compilation, flawed in content, and flawed in administration, is not a sampling of the population that we want to base such important statistics such as cut scores. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like for you to slow this train down. I'd like for you to write a letter. I'll help you with that. The commissioner and ask him to hold off. I'd like for you to ask a third party, which have been suggested to us, to look and see where we are in this, because I think we're rushing towards something that's going to hurt us for years. Let me just give you an example of how bad this is. And you all saw probably your local paper, certainly mine, about how the tests across the state, how difficult they were. We had a letter from our school district, a very good letter, and what the problems they had in Fairbanks. There was a length of the test. Normally, these types of tests are 2 to 3 hours a day. These tests took 5 to 6 hours a day for kids that are fourth graders. 3-day test. The math test was on the third day. The kids were exhausted. In the test itself, some of the test answers had no correct question. Some of the test answers had no correct questions had no correct answers. It's hard to say that because it's hard to believe. The reading questions were in the math books. test books were collated backwards, so some of the students had to take the test in reverse. For grades 4 through 9, the test booklets were 11 by 19. There was two of them. One was the question book, one was the answer book. So picture a fifth grader with two books this big on a desk that you barely fit in to start with, taking a test. In the test, embedded in the test, were somewhere between 15 and 39 new questions that are the basis of the next level of the test. Those questions haven't been verified, they haven't been validated, but we're headlong rushing into setting cut scores for our students with the high stakes test based on what I would say was a snapshot. And the snapshot at best is a fuzzy black and white picture of where our kids are today. We asked the department, because we read the paper, and you'll remember many of us sat and listened to the commissioner tell us that everything was going to be okay. Well, it's not okay. You get what you pay for, and what we have today is a test that's failed. So we asked the department for what they got back. Here's the feedback they got back from the different districts on some questions on what they thought of the test. You just have to go through this and read what some of our districts struggled with. But probably the thing is probably that is, to me, is a crux of this problem. Here's the report that I asked for. Here's the report that I got. Beth, I don't know if you can read that.
It.
Yeah. So you get this back. So you think that's an Excel spreadsheet? No, that's a JPEG file. That's a photo file. So we simply said, well, let's expand this. Let's change the font so we can read it. Can't do it. It's a JPEG file. Those are the kind of frustrations that we get when we try to deal with this issue. It's very troubling to me. It ought to be very troubling to you, the people that have put so much work into trying to get this test to work, because it is a high-stakes test, and we're talking about kids' future. And I think that we're rushing headlong into millions of dollars in lawsuits, school boards that are going to be overwhelmed by parents that think their kids, because they're spending 3 hours a day, 3 days a week, 6 or 7 hours a day taking a burdensome test, a cumbersome test, think that their kids aren't being measured. So somehow we have to slow the train down. And Mr. Chairman, you can start with that by helping, and I would ask for you to do that, and we'll get some folks that can look at our efforts to date and give some sort of an opinion on where we are and what we should do so that we don't base the tests in October on what I consider to be a very bad picture of where we are today.
Questions? Senator Green.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily disagree with Senator Wilkin because we've all heard some things. But I think as long as we're in session and we have two health education social services committees and we have an education committee in the House, and this is a policy issue. This is not just a legislative budget and audit position, and certainly should have all the parties involved here explaining, talking about it, and I want to be sure we're not is there a crossover between the high school qualifying exams and the level exams you're talking about? Because isn't that for the lower grades that you were just talking about?
There's two sections, and both had trouble. The benchmarks and the high school qualifying exam. There's questions embedded in both.
There will always be questions embedded.
Okay.
Because they always do that to prepare the next round of tests. That's just what testing things do. But I just think we need to be very careful before we hear the full. And I think Senator Wilkins got more information that's not certain than I have. But I think we're all have an interest in that information before we assign a letter.
Well, between now and the meeting that we want to set up next week, perhaps I'll discuss the information with Senator Wilkin more, and perhaps the chairs of the individual HESC committees to see what action maybe they need to do versus what action this committee needs to take. But anyway, we'll look into that to see if we need to have either a presentation or a motion that the committee undertake some action for consideration next week. Go ahead, Senator Wilken.
And what I'll do is, this is the letter to you from our district. I'll get that distributed to the members of the committee. And so you can take a look, at least from one school district, what problems they had.
Senator Green.
And I was just going to say, I would certainly encourage members to gather the information Senator Wilkins has, if they want to personally write their opinion or ask their questions. That's a very good idea, certainly.
So, Senator, will you have your staff just make mm-hmm. packets of what you think is the pertinent information there for all members to consider? And if Sheila just works with Joe, we can make sure that the members have that.
Thank you.
Any other issue? Seeing none, we are adjourned.